Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. This podcast is for self-employed business owners just like you, who really want to grow their business and become successful and profitable, but without all the stress and hassle. I want to share my 30 years of business experience to show you how simple it can be to earn more money and how you can get organized without needing a business degree or any other qualifications. I'll be talking about the easy steps that you can put in place right now to start earning more money today and to help you get the business that you deserve and dream of. Without further ado, let's get started. This week's podcast is sponsored by Pocket PA, helping self-employed business owners to get organized, understand their finances, and do their accounts all in one place using a powerful online tool. If you're serious about making a profit and having a successful business, then using a simple digital web app like Pocket PA is the best way to grow and scale your business. Visit pocketpa.com for more details and start managing your money like a pro today. Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me today. I've got another really great guest here this week, and our topic is something so important, so I'm really pleased to be covering it with you. We're going to be discussing the subject of what insurances you may need to protect both yourself and your income if you're self-employed. I know it can sometimes be a really overwhelming thing to talk about protection, especially if you think it's complicated and something that you might not know a lot about yourself. But that's exactly what podcasts like this are for. And it's so good to listen in to us chatting about how it could really help you, because essentially that's what insurance is all about. So today, my guest is Jessamy Walker from Bare Naked Money. She's going to share her own journey with us into self-employment and then explain the different types of insurances that there are so that you can see if you may want to think about taking any of them out to give you peace of mind in your own personal or business life. Because of the nature of the topic, just a quick trigger warning. We're covering off a few things around death and serious illness. And whilst we may sound like we're discussing this topic very matter-of-factly or even lightheartedly at times, in no way are we minimising the upset or devastating consequences that having a critical illness or death could have on your circumstances. I'm really passionate that we speak more about these uncomfortable or awkward topics so that more conversations can be had around them to help people understand more fully. So without any more preamble, let's get going. So Jessamy, hello, welcome to this week's podcast.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I think we need to start all of these things when we talk about financial information by saying this is not actually financial advice. It's just a quick disclaimer. It's a general chat.
So the regulator doesn't listen.
Yes. As a previous mortgage broker, I know how regulated the industry is, and I totally get why it's needed. It's a good reason to protect people. But I think insurance is one of those things that people get a bit nervous about. It's like, oh, you talk about those things when people are going to die, and it's an uncomfortable subject, particularly life insurance. Nobody wants to be confronted with their own mortality. But today, I think it would be great to hear about your journey into self-employment. And then because you are an expert in all of these different areas, it would be great to get your take on the different types of insurances that some of our listeners might be interested in hearing, and your advice as an advisor on the pros and cons of everything, if that's okay.
Yep, perfect. Sounds great. It's like anything money, though. We all go, ooh, money, and it gets really uncomfortable. And I think it's just lack of education. So if we can just do a bit of, here, this is what all these things are, and they're not scary.
Yes.
And then you can decide which ones you need.
Yes, I think it's about breaking it down and creating these conversations around money and finances to make people feel more comfortable talking about money and understanding different protection that there is for them. So you have a squiggly journey, I would imagine, becoming self-employed. Would you like to share a little bit about where you started and where you came to, what's brought you to where you are now?
Oh, always a squiggly journey into your own business, isn't it? So I'm a marine biologist. By training originally, I was brought up in Africa, and I spent the first 5 years of my working life after university counting sea urchins off the coast of Kenya and Tanzania. Fantastic, brilliant, lovely. But you hit an education and a glass ceiling. There's you either have to go and do a PhD and do marine biology properly and turn into a research scientist, or you can get stuck on the beach. So I got a bit stuck on the beach, and who wouldn't want to be stuck on the beach at 25? It was amazing. So I thought I better go temping, work out what was going on in the real world, and just decide what I really wanted to do. And the idea was that I was going to earn some money in order to go and do a PhD. But my long first temp job was in a stockbroking office, and I loved it. completely different noise, attitude, speed. You know, the casual laid back of the beach to the middle of the city in London's a little bit, yeah, opposite extremes to say the least. But it's all numbers and logic and making a journey work. Here's where you are, where do you want to be, how does it change? So it just felt, yeah, I loved it. 8 to 12 years at Stockbrokers. One of those fabulous market crashes and a recession came along and we all got, you know, the company halved in size. And I was fed up with commuting at that point. So I moved out and went to work for a financial advisor just outside Reading. And I did that for 4 years and then thought, actually, do you know what? I could just do this for myself without having to answer. I'd been to a conference and heard a guy talk about financial advice from the client's point of view and what they want. And I thought, well, that's obvious, isn't it? But actually, the more I thought about it, the more it was everything in financial services is fed down from the insurance companies. Here, I have this thing that you must buy because it's good for you, rather than here, Mr. Client, this is where you are in the world. This is what you need, not, you know, and the jargon that goes with the this is good for you stuff is just hideous. So 2016, I set up, I have two businesses. So I have a main brand of financial planning, which is the one-on-one, full-fat, chartered financial advice, pensions, investments, the whole lot. 3 or 4 years ago, I thought, actually, there's a real gap here in financial education. You know, I work in the finance world, but I go and see my accountant, and I come away from the meeting going, what the hell did he just say? I don't know. And I work in that world. So why would anybody starting out ever have any idea what it means and what it is?
That's totally the aspect that the direction that I come from, because people aren't given the real solid financial education, I feel, at school in order to equip them to manage life with a house and a mortgage and car finance and mobile phone insurance and all of these different things.
Started on that. There should be a module in sixth form that says, here, these are the useful things in the outside world that you need to learn.
Yes.
This is what your student loan is. This is how a credit card works. This is how not to get yourself into trouble. And in English, we said earlier about the regulator and the way that they position stuff and the way they explain stuff is just, yeah, it doesn't need to be that complicated. And so I set up Bare Naked Money, particularly for business owners, because I set up my business and to do my job, to sit in front of clients and do financial planning and advice and make a difference and help them go from here to here and retire well. I had no idea how to actually run a business in the background. And half of that is the financial stuff. So that's where Bare Naked Money's come from, is the education piece that says that this is how a pension works. This is how insurance works. This is how tax works, whether you're a sole trader or a director of a limited company. And these are the things that can get you into trouble if you don't think about it. That's where I've ended up.
There can be so much smoke and mirrors around finances, and that really annoys me. And this is one of the reasons that motivated me to make Pocket PA without any jargon, without using all of the accountancy terminology, because that frustrates me no end. When accountants talk about who are your debtors, they're actually just saying who still owes you money. But people hear that word debt and they think, no, I'm not in debt to anyone. And I say, no, that isn't what they mean. They're asking who owes you money. And then people say to me, why didn't they just say that? And it's almost hard to explain. Accountants get away with themselves, and the best accountants can save you lots of money. That's no question about it. But the day-to-day aspects of running a self-employed business means you just need to track, what have I got coming in? What have I got going out? And what's left for me? Those are the essences of what people need to know on a day-to-day basis, and having that finger on the pulse and the heartbeat of their business to know if they're in a financial deficit or they've got extra, because that's the difference between a profitable self-employed business and one that's actually just a hobby. And there's nothing wrong with a hobby, but if you're trying to make money and a living from it, then you need to understand the numbers. And it's about unpacking all of that and making sure that we can explain it in a deliverable way for those self-employed business owners to understand it without needing a maths or an accountancy degree. And we're on the same page exactly on that, Jess.
Totally. I mean, all that jargon and all that. I mean, I had a client the other day, well, a my accountant turned around and went, what's your EBITDA? And I went, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're very compass mentis with all of that stuff. You understand all of that language 99% of the time. So imagine how somebody's got a small business that self-employed would feel. It makes them feel that they're really out of their depth. And that's really frustrating for me, because self-employed business doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's the part that I want to make available for people.
But he could easily have said to me, what did you make before you paid tax? I could have given him that number instantly. But, you know, we have all these acronyms and all these little bits of,
nonsense. No. I call them nonsense.
Little bits of just stuff that just, talk in English.
Yes.
So we can understand and answer the question without feeling stupid.
Yes, that's exactly it. So today, the things that I thought we would start by covering off, there were four main ones, then we'll see how we go for time. But I wanted to cover off about what life insurance is, who might need it. I wanted to talk about critical illness cover, accident and sickness cover, and then also another one, if we've got time, called family income benefit. So those were the four things. And I thought if we could start with life insurance, who needs that and what's that all about, Jess?
Okay, so the big thing for self-employed or business owners is to value themselves and look at your counterpart. If you were employed doing this job, what would you get? And therefore, what do you have to replicate for yourself? Because now suddenly there isn't a big employer doing it for you. So in insurance, like everything, is what does it mean if it goes wrong? So the simplest and the most straightforward of those is the accident, sickness, unemployment. As a self-employed person, the unemployment bit's rather irrelevant, because the only person that can make you unemployed is yourself. And that just becomes too hard to prove to claim against. But so accident, sickness, unemployment, or ASU, you see it sometimes as, is a short-term insurance to cover you for a fixed amount of money per month if you can't work from a sickness or an accident. So literally that. It pays out for a short fixed period of time, normally a year, sometimes two, and they have what they call a deferred period at the beginning. So if it's deferred for 4 weeks, you claim on the 1st of May, but you don't get the first payment until the 28th of May, whatever it is. There's a blank of 4 weeks. It's one of the cheapest because it only pays out for a short period of time. Okay, so an example, 30-year-old non-smoker, good health, wanting to cover about, let's say, £1,000 a month, because so you have to be earning that amount. But that's one of the key things, is that actually you have to have you have to show profits or tradable income of these to be able to claim against insurance.
How historic do they go back to check that you've been earning that amount of money?
Oh, a couple of years. You know, the last full year's accounts. So let's say your profit is, I don't know, 30,000. You can claim up to 2/3 of that amount. So because we have variable income as self-employed people, you know, if you have a bump a year and it's 30,000, don't set your insurance up to that level. Set it to an average of what you've been earning, because they will go back and look at the last year. And if your, you know, year two or three was 30,000 and then year three or four is more normal at 25, the amount they'll pay out will come back down to that, but the amount that you pay as a premium won't change.
What if you're a brand new business owner and you're just starting out? Would this protection and insurance not be available to you then right from the get-go?
It depends. Like all of these things, it depends on who you are, what you've done before, whether you've got a track record. There are insurers that will look at it, but obviously the less track record and the more unique you are, you know. If you fit the norm, it's way easier. But if you only just started and you're in a new industry and a niche, rather, it's just finding somebody. But they are out there.
I'm just thinking of a new business owner who's trying to make sure, you know, they might be a little bit nervous moving into being self-employed, and they're wanting to have a backstop just in case they did have an accident or a sickness and weren't able to work, and they were still then able to claim some sort of income to help them through that period while they were getting better. I'm just thinking, if they were brand new, you know, early 20s, and they hadn't been in that industry before, whether that was tricky or not. But you're suggesting that there could be different people that could insure you still?
There are always the mainstream insurers, mortgage providers, whoever they are, that sit in the middle. That if you sit in that average world of, I'm buying a 3-bedroom house in the middle of something and I've got a good deposit, there are loads of choices. as soon as you sit on the fringes of that a little bit, you know, I've only been in business 3 months, 6 months, or however long it is, you have to go hunting for someone that will provide it.
And it could be a wee bit more expensive on that basis than just when you get going for your first year, perhaps.
Yeah. And then once you're established a couple of years, revisit it, you know, but don't stick with the thing you took out at the very beginning. Get one of the mainstream ones because they will be cheaper.
I think that's one of the great advice. I love Martin Lewis because he's always encouraging us to not allow things just to tick over because you're used to sticking with them. It's always a really important lesson to go back and revisit these policies and insurances and things to see if you're on the most competitive price, if it still fits your needs and all of those things, which it's very easy not to bother doing it because it takes a little bit of time and a little bit of legwork, but you can actually save a lot of money by doing that. And you need to make sure that you've got an insurance that still fits your situation as well.
So we do that actually as an exercise across the business and personally every 6 months. It started in the business. I go down all the direct debits and go, is it a profit or is it a leak? So is it adding to my profitability and or do I need it? Or is it a nice to have that's where the money leaks out? And it's amazing how with the insurance, particularly those are the ones that you can correct.
Okay, so that's accident and sickness cover, and that could cover you. So that's really if you're incapacitated, if you broke your leg and you couldn't get in and out to work, if you had another type of illness like a COVID thing, would there be some sort of restrictions that may be discounted that mean you couldn't claim, or they will always state that on the policy up front to know what is and isn't covered?
Yeah, it's always read the small print. Mm-hmm. COVID is one of those things that, you know, and there's always a acts of terrorism and God, you know, war and whatever it is that storms something or other. So there's always a caveat about things like that. But basically read the small print. It's really, don't just skip past and tick the I agree box like we all do. Yeah, just have a look, see what the exclusions are. Because again, it's written in a bit of rubbish, but you can get through to them normally. So,
and if you're unsure, I think it's important to just ask outright, just be clear. I was concerned, say to them, I'm concerned, does it cover me if X, Y, and Z happens? If you've got a pre-existing condition, it may well exclude that, but just be upfront and make sure that you disclose everything, because again, that could mean that you don't get to claim if you haven't been transparent at the outset and entered into a policy where you've not mentioned something. And it can be found on your medical records. I think it's important that we highlight that, because you don't want to be paying into a policy for months on end and then find that you have to claim. And because you didn't mention something, it won't pay out for you.
Yeah,
totally.
So accident, sickness and unemployment is slightly different to the other insurances we'll come on to, in that it pays out for a fixed term. So it's normally only a short period of time, but it will cover things like the broken leg or the short-term things that are wrong that can be fixed relatively easily and you can get back to work, which is why it only pays for a short period of time. If you go on then from that into income protection, which is a similar thing but pays over a longer period of time, medical underwriting and history is far more important and they go into greater depth. You know, there's much more of a family history, medical records, they'll ask your doctors for a report. Some of the accident sickness ones, there is no medical underwriting. You can literally just self-declare. So ordinary income protection and let's say critical illness cover, because they're very similar. So the two do literally, critical illness cover tends to pay out a lump sum. Income protection pays out a regular monthly amount. So what they both protect you against long-term illness, but more critical things. So, I don't know, heart attack, cancer, you know, permanent type life-changing illness rather than I've broken my leg. You know, stuff that's life-changing for a longer period of time. And so critical illness will pay a lump sum normally. It's often linked to mortgage protection or something like that, but you don't have to pay off the mortgage with it. Just because you've linked it like that, if you want to use it to generate an income and live off the interest, for want of a better expression, that's fine. It's an amount of money that comes out to you to do that. Income protection does exactly that. It pays a regular income. So rather than paying out a single lump sum, it'll pay two-thirds of your income. This is where we go back to that tax return thing and how the profit or the money that you make has a relevance on what kind of insurance level you can take.
the income protection and the accident sickness, they're designed not to leave you better off. So there's like an incentive to actually claim them. That's the point, isn't it? They're designed to actually replace and give you an ongoing income in order for you to be able to still carry on with your outgoings and your day-to-day life. They're not designed like the lottery to suddenly find that you've got all of this money and that it's way better to actually claim on one of these policies than actually be back working. They're designed as a legitimate income replacement.
And that's why they're max, they're capped at 60% of your earnings. So if you're earning, say, £3,000 a month, you can only claim up to £2,000, because there has to be an incentive for you to want to go back to earning what you were. But they are related and linked to heart attack, cancer, Parkinson's, Hodgkin's disease, all those massive life-changing, you need space to breathe, to deal with what's being thrown at you.
And I think there's also an element. So the difference is with the critical illness insurance, you get a lump sum amount. And when with the income replacement, you're getting it over a monthly sort of drip fed to you for a finite period of time. And I think the reason that I've taken critical illness insurance out was that if you were to have something that is on that list of critical illnesses, you aren't needing to have that added stress of having to go back to work. It could be a sum that could potentially pay off your mortgage or give you a lump sum of money to either have some treatment privately that you may not have been able to have afforded that could improve your chances to be able to recover and get better and lead a normal existence. Or you have a lump sum of money because it may be that you can't return to work to be able to actually maintain and get an income to replace what you were doing before. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're both, you know, for both of them, it's to buy you time and headspace to deal with this big thing that's come along. You know, you go for tests, you come back and you know, here, you've got this disease. Well, it takes up an awful lot of headspace. And to run your own business and do all of that and juggle a family, you know, let's face it, there's an awful lot of entrepreneurs out there that are particularly women who are juggling a family, home, all of those things as well. And it's something that it's like either link it to your mortgage and pay off the mortgage, because that's normally the biggest expense in a month that comes out, or use it to create an income that means actually you can park work. You can come back to it when you're ready. And it gives you just the headspace to be able to be and deal with what's important, which for most people is the family.
Yes. And I think if you have got family commitments and you are a mum and you're looking after little ones, the actual space, if you had some additional money coming in or a lump sum amount, it could help to be paid on childcare just to give you that, as you say, that breathing space or that extra pair of hands to enable you to get through each day to be able to cope with things. And like any insurance, it's a protection. So I'm very mindful of like scaring people into thinking, oh my God, I need all of these things. This is, you know, I've got to have them. There's always a monetary aspect to consider, but it's about the peace of mind and it's that trade-off. Figures are increasing with prevalence of different types of illnesses and cancers and those sorts of things. So I think more people are looking for that peace of mind. And it's important that we open these conversations up to let people know that there are protections and insurances, because that's all that insurance ever is. It's a fallback position. It's a protection.
It's a safety net.
Yes.
So interestingly, I did a lot of work about 3 years ago with about 5 or 6 jockeys. And every single one of them, once they'd got life insurance and accident and critical illness insurance in, had their best season ever afterwards, because it was something they didn't have to worry about. So that it gave them the space to go and be more successful, which it really interesting that, you know, these guys throw themselves over fixed timber fences at 30 miles an hour. But
so it gave them a less cautious approach to life. They felt that they had things covered if something were to go wrong.
Either that, or they had a plan and that they knew that it was okay, so they could then concentrate on what they were doing better. They didn't have that, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, what am I supposed to can't do? You know, that there wasn't that constant little niggle in your head about something. They'd dealt with it. It was to one side. They could focus on what they were doing. And whether they had time to ride more, go places more, be more attentive to the rides they were doing. But it was really interesting how it just gave them the space to focus, to be better at what they did.
So interesting. So that's the income protection and the critical illness insurance. And the one that I thought we would be starting with was the life insurance. But is that, are we saving that to last, or who would need life insurance?
So pretty much the same. Life insurance, so critical illness and income protection, you are likely to claim on 4 times more than you are life insurance. Medical science and the like has developed so much more that, you know, this sounds really gruesome, but we don't just die anymore. You know, you don't get in a car accident, oh, that's it, off you go. And life insurance pays out on, I don't know why they call it life insurance either, but I suppose
death insurance, isn't it?
Yeah, doesn't really sound very nice, does it? But yeah, it pays out a lump sum when you die. And so it's, if you have people that are financially dependent on you being there. So again, it comes back to the family thing. Particularly, you know, if you have young children, to be able to have a lump of money, that means that their guardians can pay for them to grow up.
So if you don't have dependents, Jess, would you actually need life insurance if you don't have either a mortgage or anyone to leave anything to? If you're a young girl or guy that's just starting out and you're self-employed, life insurance probably wouldn't be the top of your list if you don't have dependents. Is that correct?
No, further down the list. So right, you're 4 times more likely to claim on accident insurance or critical illness. It's more expensive. I'm going to be really cynical here and say life insurance is a really easy sale. Mm. And we all think, oh, I'm covered. That's fantastic. It's done. If you don't have any, if you have no, so I don't have life insurance personally, because I don't have anybody that will be, sounds awful, anybody that will be affected by my dying. They will be affected by my not being able to earn.
Yes.
And so I have income protection in place instead. So there's a scale of what you go up. I would start with the accident sickness as step one. And this is a general rule of thumb. This comes back to, this is not conventional advice, but it's a kind of given in the scale of things. Accident sickness, unemployment, step up to income protection, step up to critical illness, life insurance.
When I was a mortgage advisor and we would talk about the different protections and we would get onto the critical illness insurance and the life insurance, I think there was a conversation or there was a line that talked about if you had dependents or not. And if you were to have a critical illness, would this be the difference between whether you put the pillow under someone's head or over their head? And that was such an uncomfortable thing to sort of, it was an analogy that other brokers used. And I thought, gosh, it's whether someone is worth more to you because they're actually dead, or whether there's a critical illness policy in place that would mean we want them to stay alive and we want to be able to have something that sustains their life and we can still carry on financially. But if you have a partner and that's the dilemma, somebody may be worth more to you if they are deceased, and that's a horrifying thought. So let's look at protection that would obviously want you to put the pillow under their head rather than over their head, because that's quite a horrifying, stark reality of the difference between what they both represent, I think.
But it's true, you know, and life insurance. So I don't know, life insurance can be, you know, when you're 20, 30 odd, it can be £10 a month, you know, and you just think, oh, perfect, I'm insured, tick. Job done, off you go. Actually, is it relevant? No. Is it probably better to spend the £30 or £40 and have something that is going to be useful to you? Definitely.
And it's totally free to get a quotation or a price and to have a look at it and discuss the level, because you don't have to start out on a really high level. And the longer that you take the policy out for, is that usually a more cost-effective route?
Yeah, if you're younger, it's going to be cheaper, mm-hmm, because you're far less likely to claim on everything. You know, the older you get, the closer you are to being likely to claim on stuff. It's just, you know, wear and tear and how we are. So, but you can fix the cost of it right back at the beginning. So, I mean, if you're 20 or 30, then, yeah, take it out at a cheap level and fix it forever, essentially.
Yes. Well, you can't do forever, can you? You will need to put a term on your policy, but I know what you mean.
No, but, you know, you can go to 65 when you're, and tie it up with, I think we're buying it into their 70s and 80s and all that. But you can claim your pension before that. You don't need to insure that income too. So tie it in with with when your pension becomes available and stuff like that.
And I think we are living so much longer these days because of the amazingness of modern medicine and because we're looking after ourselves a lot better. So there is a lot, you know, we have a lot to look forward to. So I think it's good to look at these things, particularly as they are cheaper when we look at them earlier. And it's important that we open these conversations up to unpack the complexity of them, because a lot of people that just think, oh, insurances, they're not for me, but they don't actually understand what each of them cover. And when you are self-employed, working for yourself, by yourself, it's really important, because if your family are relying on your income, you do need to look at those eventualities, because you would be really exposed if something were to happen to you, and it would be very impactful on your family dynamics and finances and your lifestyle, etc., if one of these things did happen to you. And obviously nobody's wanting to predict them, but that's why they're called accidents. They're not expected.
And so many of the websites, Martin Lewis is great to a point, but he does have a tramline that he's going down, and that this is what you should have. But there are on the Go Compare and the I want to say Whole of the Meerkat, but that's not what I'm looking for, but you know who I mean. There are little questionnaires and little decision trees that say, you know, are you married? Do you have dependents? What's your, you know, and you can follow them through, and they'll give you a very generic, here, this is where you should start. And like all of these things, the first step's always the hardest. But little steps, you know, you don't have to look at it and go, oh my God, I need £500,000. I can't afford that.
No,
start with 50. You know,
you don't need to have to take it all out at once, and you don't need to have to take it out at high levels, but it's about getting started and building those layers and those tiers of financial security to have yourself protected.
Totally. I mean, you know, if something happened and you had an accident and actually it meant you've got £200 a month coming in, you know, you might need 1,000, but if you've got 200, that's a bill dealt with, you know. And if that's what you can afford to do, then afford to do it at the level you can, and just add to it as you go along. Yeah. Mm. And the more you earn, don't leave those languishing at the really low levels of the earnings that I had when I was 20, when now you're 40 and you're earning a bit more. You know, have a look at them every now and then and review them.
And the good thing is there are people just like you that are all over the place and available to talk it through and to discuss those sorts of things and to get more information so that you understand it and can build something that's totally personal and bespoke to what your needs are, because no two people's situations are the same and everybody will benefit from having that conversation just to open up and understand a bit more and see what the actual cost could be. And even if you do nothing with it for 3-6 months, even a year, while you work out, is that something that you want or you can afford? At least you're enlightened and you have that information and you understand and know it a little bit more, and you know what you might be Googling and looking for, and be aware of it, because I think awareness is always that first part before we work out if it's something that's suitable for us.
Exactly that. And there are some great places for education. There's a website called The Motley Fool. I think it's just www.fool.co.uk, but it literally, it talks to you as if you are a fool. Is there, and that's their ethos.
Just my sort of site.
It's brilliant. Exactly. And the information on there, some of the other investment ones, Nutmeg and Wealthify, are also as good. But The Fool is really just basic information about how different things work and what to look out for.
I always think explain it to somebody as if they've got the level of a 12-year-old. That's where I want to have things understood, because people don't want to be made to feel small or silly that they haven't quite got something, that they need to ask another question. And there are often things and terminologies and acronyms, shortenings of stuff that people presume you know. And it's really just annoying more than anything else, because nobody wants to feel on the outside. They want to think, oh, I understand that now. How clever are you that you could explain it in a way that I could understand it? That light bulb moment. We all want that.
Yeah, we do. And we have a similar caveat. We have a thing in the office that says, will my mum understand it?
Yes.
And that's it. Any email that goes out to a client or anything like that is, will my mum know what's going on, is the headline filter.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
And that's my mum, not anyone else's.
Yes. I was going to say, what age is your mum? Jess, thank you. That's been so enlightening. I think we've really hopefully opened up a lot of thought processes for people that haven't come across any of those before. If our listeners would like to find out and get in touch with you, if they wanted to connect with you, what's the best place for them to go to find you and find a way to speak to you?
Okay. So I have a Facebook group, which is called the Bare Naked Money Community. And I do trainings and just education, morning ramblings, basically.
And that's a free Facebook group?
free Facebook group. Love it is that. A private group, so you do have to join it, but it's there. Or follow me on Facebook, Jessamy Walker. There are two Jessamy Walkers, and I'm the one that's the financial planner.
Bluetooth. I will put a link in the show notes so that they can definitely find you. Yes, that's no problem.
But, and then Bare Naked Money on Instagram.
Perfect. No, that's great. Yes. Thank you. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to today's podcast with Jessamy and I. Thank you for joining us. Have a great week, whatever you're up to, and I look forward to catching up with you again next time. Thanks for listening to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do hit subscribe so we can catch up again soon. And please kindly leave a review if you've got a moment and share with anyone else that you think this podcast could help on their self-employed journey. If you're ready to make bigger breakthroughs in your business life and want to get way more organized and understand your finances the really simple way, then start your very own 14-day free trial today using the super powerful software tool Pocket PA that I made for my own son and daughter. Go to pocketpa.com/podcast and let's get you on the way to earning more money and stressing much less. Have a great week, whatever you're doing.